Hello and welcome to the S Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about words that begin with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I'm Win Myun Kim.
And with us today, we've got two guest hosts, a brand new guest host for you guys. We have Mr. Sung Lee. How are you doing, Sung?
Okay. Good evening, afternoon, morning, night, whatever time it is you're listening to this.
All right. And we've got our returning guest host from a previous episode. It was more of a
stuff
episode. And this is Mr. Chris Nguyen.
Hello, everybody.
The same one that is not related to Dom. Anyways, let's go straight into our subject. This week's subject being Street Fighter the movies. Now, this correlates with the new movie, Street Fighter the Legend of Chun-Li.
Which I believe is still 0% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, isn't
that
it?
That is correct, and quite the injustice to such a quality film. We will be going into that a bit later on.
Possibly in alphabetical order.
We have all seen the film on opening Friday night, all gained quite the number of nerd points, but also lost, I would say, quite the number of
brain cells.
Not just brain cells, but respect points, I would have to say, too.
Yeah, there's nobody who came out of that movie looking good.
So let's actually go away from that movie for a little bit. I know we're very ready to discuss that movie.
Like a boss.
And let's go into a question we like to usually ask on this show. When was the first time you watched the very first Street Fighter movie? And by first, I mean the Jean-Claude Van Damme one, first Hollywood Street Fighter movie.
Would you like to know? I've never actually seen the whole thing.
Really?
I have never seen the whole thing.
I have seen it in the theaters when I was a kid. And that just told me how stupid I was when I was a kid.
You know what the funny thing is that a friend at Capcom once actually tried to get me to put on the Guile costume from that. He was selling it because Capcom had recently moved warehouses and they wanted to sell off the old stuff. So he was like, hey, Guile costume probably fits you. You're about Jean-Claude Van Damme size. And I said, no, Rob, no.
How much did it cost?
Like 500 or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap. And it's still clothes that you would never wear anywhere, but you could wear.
I can't wear a tank top. That's like illegal in 3 states.
I just imagine it like drooping over your shoulders.
I know.
It's like so loose.
Because I don't have the muscles. I'm not from Brussels.
So Sung and Chris, I know you guys have seen this movie before too. It was pretty much inevitable that somehow you would have seen it, right?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters.
Oh, awesome.
I did too.
Well, I am superior to all of you.
Dang. So what did you think? Like, why did you go and see it? Did you see it because you thought maybe it would be interesting to watch, or just because of the name, or
mainly it was me and my brothers. We were big fans of the Street Fighter 2 series, at least, and we also liked the Van Damme films before they got really, really bad. Which I'm sure some people would say was from the very first one, but
yeah, I mean,
I love how there even is a line at which point they become bad somehow.
Look, Double Impact. Have you ever seen that one with Dennis Rodman and Mickey Rourke?
Oh, no, I've never seen that.
Oh, it is so bad.
It is post Street Fighter, though.
I believe it's post Street Fighter, so there is a demarcation.
No, it's not Double Impact. It is Double Team.
Double Team, that's right. Yes, was Double Impact, which one was that?
I think you're thinking of Deep Impact, which is the...
No, there was a Double Impact.
It was
Double
like two impact. Jean-Claude Van Damme's, right? Like,
that's
Twin
what
brothers.
I was
There are two
of,
Impact
yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Damme movies?
No, well, Double Impact, where he played twins.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, he played himself like
twice. Wow. Oh, wait, Double Team. I gotcha.
Damn. There's two double movies.
Yeah, there are two double movies for Jean-Claude Van Damme. Okay. Chris, what about you? You say you saw it in
theaters
as
well. Because you're a sucker, isn't it?
Yes, I am. Yes, I actually did see it in the theater also, and it was also, had been playing Street Fighter 2 Turbo Championship Edition, like, on the Super NES. So I thought, oh, you know, interesting. It'd be a Street Fighter movie. I like movies, so decided to go see it. I didn't actually think it was going to be that great. And I think when I saw it, I think there were like only two other people in the theater besides me.
So when I did see it, I was also around that age. I think I was in elementary school. And I remember the one thing me and my friends were really interested in was how were they going to do Blanka. And the answer is very terribly. I think I was one of the other people in your theater, although I don't think Sung was in that theater. It was me and a friend. I really don't have much to say. I do think that every single time I do see it on television again, I really want to watch it. And if someone's ever playing clips of it, I will watch those clips of the movie.
I've seen clips.
I enjoy it in a bad way.
Yeah, I kind of feel sorry for Raul Julia because I really loved him in King Lear and Shakespeare at the Park. Just for his career to end that way is even more pathetic than Orson. Was it Orson Welles who ended his career with Transformers?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It was Orson Welles. Even more pathetic than that.
Some cornerstone.
Well, even you got to think about it. Raul Julia plays M. Bison as best he can, given this really terrible material.
And his obviously failing health.
Yeah, he does not look good in this movie at all. And
but, I mean, he was, as Edmund in King Lear, he was just like, he oozed sex appeal, he oozed charisma and charm. And I highly suggest anybody who's listening to this podcast, if you have any interest in Shakespeare, try and find the recording of that specific Shakespeare performance, because Raul Julia is excellent.
All right. Any other things you want to mention about the very first Street Fighter movie before we start diving into really, really not so fun territory?
I have to say that while I did escape the Street Fighter movie, I did not escape the Street Fighter cartoon. I did watch that.
The U.S. cartoon, not the
U.S.
anime.
Cartoon. The anime was fine, except for Street Fighter 2V. That was a little homoerotic, but that's fine too, compared to the American cartoon.
I will say two things about the Street Fighter movie, and that is that, first of all, I did rewatch it recently in preparation for this podcast.
As did I, too.
And I had forgotten that Kylie Minogue. It was in it as Cammy.
And don't forget Ming-Na as Chun-Li.
Still remember that. Also, that Chaga and Asuka, who are very, very popular in Japan, they sing the theme, I guess you would call it.
Yes,
the ending song for the credits, right? Yeah.
One thing that I was, with all these like video game movies, including Street Fighter and also with Mortal Kombat and such, is also kind of funny or kind of interesting to see how they would somehow try to incorporate a move from like each fighter. So at least that's how I always try to, like, every time I saw one of these movies, I try to see, okay, are they going to include this fight, like this fireball, how would they portray this shuriken? And it probably in context, it totally doesn't work and usually doesn't, but it's still fun to try to see.
I have to say, at least from this Street Fighter movie, they did try to throw in things for the fans. Like, you remember the scene in which M. Bison changes his hats? Every single one of those hats is coded in the different color schemes for his different color palettes. There are also other moments. There's things in the background. There's a scene at a dock. A lot of these things that are supposed to be references to different stages of the original game. And at least I thought it was interesting that the director even spent the time to try to do something hokey like that for its fans. I mean,
The Dictator was also using a Capcom joystick pad, I guess, which was what you would call it, when he was trying to blow up Van Damme using
depth charges.
Yeah, depth charge mines.
Yeah, I remember that clearly. Especially as a kid, you got really excited actually to see that, because you're like, hey, I've used that before. Now when I look at it, I'm like, well, it's hokey, but the whole movie was hokey to begin with, anyways.
Then again, it's not necessarily an old thing, or it's not necessarily a thing that's died out, because remember in the first X-Men movie, what they used to control the Blackbird is a flight stick.
Oh, that's true.
Also, the Enterprise in, was it Insurrection?
Insurrection, that's correct.
Yes, where he uses a Microsoft joystick to control the Enterprise.
And let's never forget about Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, where they use an Atari pad, isn't it?
No. It's the NES Advantage pad.
The NES Advantage, got it.
They knew which pad they wanted to go with. Anyways, I think that pretty much wraps up what we want to talk about with the first movie. Let's go into a little bit of the side notes. City Hunter, we all sort of know the scene in which Jackie Chan dresses up as different characters from Street Fighter.
Including E. Honda. He has like a half second as Dalsim.
Chun-Li.
The main one being Chun-Li.
That's the one where he wins. Fighting against the stereotypical big white guy who undoes his hair and is suddenly Ken.
And him doing the happy jumping and giggling and peace sign, that's forever burned into my brain.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that one.
Now, I gotta say, for that City Hunter movie, I think that's the only scene I ever remember. The rest of it just ended up being kind of generic.
I actually remember the musical number, which is my eternal shame.
I remember Jackie Chan looking at women and just seeing hamburgers or like a chicken leg.
He
was like starving at that point.
I don't remember any of these moments you guys are talking about.
You really aren't losing anything. So yeah, it's probably something that you should never really seek out.
Duly noted.
All right, so now that we've gotten all this other stuff off and done, I don't think we're going to really address the anime too much.
The anime was fine.
Chun-Li was naked. That's all I remember.
Oh, they're talking about the
infamous shower scene. Yes.
Right, right. I thought it was, compared to everything else, it's been one of the better renditions of
the music was
Street
better.
Fighter. Yeah, the music was great.
The music was great in that movie. And then it has Dictator trying to run over you with a truck at the end. Spoiler.
Wow, that sounds great. Very fitting, right?
It is.
Anything else you want to talk about for the anime before we move on to the movie we have just seen and are very eager to talk about?
Can we delay talking about the movie a little bit? No.
Oh. You must talk about the movie now.
Boy.
Starting from now, we are talking about Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, the new movie from 20th Century Fox that was just released this past weekend. And for a budget of $60 million,
this was filmed on location
in Thailand. This stars Kristen Kreuk and...
Chris Klein
from the American Pie movies.
And Michael Clark Duncan.
Michael Clark Duncan, yes.
And the guy from the Black Eyed Peas. Was it?
Yes, taboo. Yes, taboo as Vega. Let's go around and everyone, you get to say one word about what you thought about this movie, and then we'll go right into full blown discussion.
I'm just gonna go with
interwebs.
Hot as in Kristen Kreuk is.
No, she's hot. Not anymore.
Voiceovers. Okay, so all everyone, right. Go into why you chose specifically that word.
Well, do you want
sound.
Me to go down the... Okay, so I chose that sound because it's the sound that Sideshow Bob makes when anything bad happens to him. And that's just how it felt like the entire movie.
Feel like this movie was something bad that happened to you?
Well, you know that scene from the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons where he just steps on a rake and gets hit in the head by it and then turns to the side and steps on another rake and gets hit in the head by it? That's how bad this movie was. Because, I mean, I have an alphabetical list that I wanted to get through of just how bad this movie is. Because, I mean, it starts with acting and ends with, what was the last one in there? I think it was voiceovers. Just so bad. So bad. Do you want me to start with A, acting?
Hey, let's see how many you can go through.
All right, so A is for acting. It's for how bad Kristen Kreuk was at trying to play the piano in a dramatic fashion. As well as people having to deal with really bad lines, which is B, sorry, bad lines. They didn't even have good one-liners. You know, the big climactic one-liner at the end is, fathers always have a soft spot for their daughters. Oh, so bad. C is several things, actually. There was cinematography, there was costuming, there was... casting. Where do you want? Which C do you want me to choose here?
Okay, we can pretty much end at that point. So, pretty much the entire movie was not worth it for you.
Well,
was there? Okay, I actually can't even understand if you got anything funny out of the movie really that much. It works very much at trying to be serious the entire time,
and that's where it fails miserably. Is it does try to be serious,
and it's not even unintentionally funny.
Yeah, and even I was hoping this would just be a good bad movie, like the Jean-Claude Van Damme one.
One was campy, at least.
Yeah, and
camp value.
This one was so bad. I wish we were watching the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie in the theater.
I've seen that in a lot of reviews of this movie, is that it was so bad I wish I was watching Raul Julia and Jean-Claude Van Damme fight it out. Then again, another review I saw said, I would rather see my own mother taking a shower than watch this movie. So that's how bad it was.
Ouch.
So, Song, what about your word?
My word was interwebs, which one of the key, it's kind of a dual thing for the movie, which is, first of all, the internet. You could find apparently all sorts of information on the internet that even the police don't even know about, apparently, in that movie. And the second is this whole organization of the web.
That was the hokiest thing. Oh, my goodness.
So I'm not gonna say anything in terms. Okay, whatever. We're gonna talk about the entire movie. If you really think any of this is spoilers that you really don't need to listen to, then you can go ahead and turn off the podcast. But I don't think anyone's gonna do that. So
you have no interest in watching this movie, do
Chun-Li
you?
Chun-Li finds a clan of, I guess, warriors,
Thai underground things.
people that fight bison.
Yeah.
Anyways, and they're called the Order of the Web. And the way you know they're part of the Order of the Web is by looking at their hand and looking for a very obvious web tattoo, as though bad guys can't see this web tattoo and know to kill this guy because he's obviously part of the resistance.
Remember, the cops can't see it either. Only Chun-Li can notice it.
Do you remember how the internet works in their world, in that it's pretty much just a picture that they generated using paint? And then typed in whatever. Did you read the article she was reading?
No.
It actually makes no sense. Read the words. It's a run-on sentence on the second half. And the first half actually does not end. It's just words and there's no period or anything.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's supposed to go off to like the side that they didn't show, but...
It was bad.
Yeah, like you couldn't even do the website right. Really? $60 million, you cannot just fake a website.
Get WordPress.
Makes you know wonder where $60 million went.
All right, Chris, what was your word again?
It was hot, as in Kristen Crook was hot.
But she's not even that hot anymore. It's not that she's gotten skinny, but it's that she's gotten bony.
I haven't seen Smallville, so actually it's kind of like...
She does look a lot better in Smallville.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I have to ask you this, Chris, because you came up to me and said you actually wanted to see this movie. So I said, fine, you know, we're going to be talking about it on a subject later on.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be good. I still wanted to see it.
Was really Kristen Kreuk the main reason to see it? Nothing else?
Yeah, pretty much.
Did you get what you wanted?
Not really.
Well, there you go.
She didn't even have a shower scene. What kind of Chun-Li is that?
They have that.
No,
that
they didn't have the bathroom.
Girl on girl bathroom fight.
After that horrible dance, which is my D of how bad this movie is.
Oh my god, that dance will always forever haunt me.
And not only that,
you must see this movie to see the dance. That is actually a valid reason to see this
movie.
Not
only was the dance bad, I had to look away from the screen, which I didn't even do during The Passion of the Christ.
It was so blatantly, like, could no one watch this movie and be like, hey, that looks like S word.
not only that, but she's dancing to MC Frontalot, isn't she?
I don't even know.
It's the worst club music of all time.
It was terrible. They have this like club. Yeah, and the club looks like a club from the 90s or something like that, too. They dance, which is more like Kristen Kreuk moving left and
right. They can't see your air quotes.
I'm sorry. Air quotes happened there.
And then, like, she lures the villainess into a bathroom and they have a weird cat fight.
Yes, there's a random villainess who, you know, we have to learn immediately loves chicks. So that's the reason why Chun-Li is able to draw her into a bathroom and fight her. Really? That's the best plot point you can come up with to have them fight?
And then the cops don't actually notice. They don't seem to be watching. Yes. It's like, oh, she's got into a bathroom.
The bodyguards don't notice. The cops don't notice. And
Chun-Li beats up like six people with guns by using a stripper pole.
Oh god, yes. There is a part where she goes into this room filled with strippers, all wearing clothes, of course.
And by the way, the song in the background is a rap about Street Fighter, which is the least sexy thing.
Oh, that's right. I remember hearing it go like Street Fighter or something like that in the back.
This is also the same scene that actually does her spinning bird kick. So she does have one move in the movie.
Oh, she has a necklace in which her father told her about
the spinning bird kick.
Just the spinning bird. She learns the spinning bird kick somewhere along her journey. I guess she got the inspiration from the necklace.
Maybe she got the inspiration from Liu Kang.
Even a reason to have the necklace? No, see, there you go. It is just extra crap. And this is what I feel about this movie. So much of it is extra crap pumped into the movie. And the movie is only 90 minutes long. And they had to pump extra crap into
it. They didn't even just... The reason Mortal Kombat was a good video game movie was because they decided, you know what? Let's get rid of all of this plot stuff and just do fight scenes.
Yes, like, when I really think about it, how many fights were in this movie? And here's something I'm going to tell you right now. You go to the Legend of Chun-Li website right now, they have a clip of Chun-Li fighting Vega. Okay? You think that this clip is just an excerpt. It's only a minute and 20 seconds long. And in that minute, 20 seconds, you do not fight the entire time.
Well, that's
I watched that clip before we went into this movie. That is the whole fight.
The especially bad thing about all of these fight scenes is that almost none of these people who are in the movie know anything about making a fight scene look good. The only ones who had any clue were Michael Clark Duncan, who was only okay, and Robin Shaw, who was usually good in his fight scenes, but only his fight scenes.
I gotta tell you, the director for this, or whoever decided to do the choreography, decided probably, let's just have them stand around and fight, because the easiest thing we can do is every single time someone gets hit or any move is executed, we just zoom in so that the audience is confused as to what's happening.
Yeah,
every single time I was like, dude, I can't understand anything that's going on. Oh, I guess she beat him.
The only time that there was a cohesive fight scene was when Robin Shaw was doing it, because he has the experience to do martial arts action scenes. Everyone else, there would be like a really badly edited and badly cut move that made you confused about what just happened, followed by a close-up on the person's face because, you know, they're important actors, and then another like brief flurry of very confusing jump cuts, followed by another close-up.
It's very, very professional.
Yes.
It's are you a professional?
I am.
We are done professionally. All right?
Yeah, I remember that Robin Shaw was also Liu Kang in the original Mortal Kombat movie, so that's he's the one actor to actually star in Mortal Kombat and a Street Fighter movie.
I don't think he wants to put this movie on his resume.
Which okay, is funny because that man was in
Robin Shaw. He was also in Dead or Alive.
Oh,
you know what?
Robin Shaw is my
hero.
I
have not seen Dead or Alive.
You shouldn't.
I bet you I would have had a way better time seeing that than The Legend of Chun-Li.
That's probably true. Although the girls do not...
It is more entertaining.
The girls do not actually look better, do they? Because they had that girl from Sin City who looks like her face was hit by a pan. What was her name?
Aoki something.
Devin Aoki. Yes. Pan face.
Yeah. Sorry.
I am sorry if you find her attractive. I really think she was once attractive until the pan hit her face.
Yeah. So anyway, Robin Shaw. Robin Shaw.
Right? You can laugh out loud, Song. It's okay.
So anyway, Robin Shaw. He is the mark of quality, but I only say that ironically because...
He has the most awful mustache in this movie.
And don't forget his Asian mutton chop.
Oh, God. It was so hard to even tell that it was him.
No, I knew him. I followed his career more closely than anybody has a right to. Now, I watched Beverly Hills Ninja. I liked that movie.
Let's talk about him in this movie. He plays Gen, which to a lot of regular American audiences is not really a familiar character, although he was in Street Fighter IV now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But he was in Alpha. That's where he came from.
Actually, let's talk about that. Most of the story comes from Alpha. So if you know the storyline for Alpha, you probably will figure out everything.
So I'm pull out the word air quotes again as I say this.
Air quotes?
Story of Alpha.
Yes, what a great story from Alpha, and what a great way to adapt it into a film. Anyways, let's go back to Gen. And so Gen is in part of this Order of the Web we were talking about.
No, he is the Order of the Web.
He is the Order of the Web. What? Really?
No, no,
he's every single person?
No, he's not every single person, but like he starts it and you know he keeps it going.
He's the creator and head.
Yeah. Oh, he's the creator.
Of the
Order of the Web.
I think he's the only member that we really see of the Order of the Web.
Well,
right?
We see a bunch of random people with spider web
faces.
Hands and no faces, real faces, except for that lady who randomly gives Chun-Li an egg roll.
Yes, there's
an entire scene dedicated to
see,
Chun-Li being hungry.
About. Pumping crap into the movie. Chun-Li is walking down the street. She sees an egg roll on a tray. On a food cart. And this old lady who has the Order of the Web tattoo on her hand picks up the
egg roll,
gives it to her, smiles, and then Kristen Kreuk smiles back
and bows.
Then eats the egg roll.
She offers money first.
Oh, she offers money first. I'm sorry. This is a minute of the movie, and there are only 90 minutes in this movie. 90 minutes including credits. So... this is what you're watching. And let's not forget
this
that...
This is what we watched.
So This is what we paid to watch on our Friday night after working or after going through a hard day of going through WonderCon, walking around, trying to figure out what to do.
I wish I'd snuck a beer into that theater. I really do.
If this was the reward for my... you know, hardworking day, or actually, if this was the reward for my week, I already know I'm living in hell.
We were in hell for 90 minutes, Kevin. You can't say anything else than that we were in hell for 90 minutes.
You know what else tells me that we were in hell? That every trailer in front of this movie was also for a terrible movie.
Fighting.
Yes, there is a movie called Fighting with Channing Tatum, who's going to be playing Duke in the new G.I. Joe movie. Oh, big whoop. And Terrence Howard, who is no longer going to be in Iron Man 2. The movie is basically, I think, the same story as Never Back Down. It's about street fighting. And, oh, I guess Never Back Down is Ultimate Fighting. I don't know.
Anyway.
The movie is called Fighting.
Then there was, what is it, The Haunting in Connecticut?
The Haunting in Connecticut, which, you know, you could think about it one way. It could actually be a horror movie, or it could be like The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. So which one is it? It's the horror movie. Anyways,
yeah, anyway.
That looks terrible, too.
What else was on there?
There was a movie called The Battle of Terra.
The
Battle for Terra. This is an animated film coming out in May. It is a 3D animated film, and it pretty much uses every single generic
science fiction trope
and line. They actually say it's a trap in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah.
This comes out in May, mind you.
And then there's also, hold on!
Yes. Basically, in my mind, this was Delgo 2. And if you have not heard of Delgo, I highly recommend you wiki Delgo right now. It pretty much holds the record for the lowest per theater income of all time for a major release.
Not only that,
2,000 plus screen release.
It was a 2,000 plus screen release. It got beaten that week by Doubt, which was released on 40 screens.
Yes, that is true. Here's another thing I want to tell you about. Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li, distribution, 1,300 screens on its opening weekend, which is pretty low for a brand new movie, especially given the budget for it.
$60 million.
Delgo opened on 2,000 plus screens. This is how much faith 20th Century Fox had in this movie. So let's you know.
So wait, over under, how long will Legend of Chun-Li last in theaters? 2 weeks? That's the over under.
You forget under? I am living in hell, so forever.
What about you, Sung? What do you think? Over or under? 2 weeks.
No, there's no way it can last under 2 weeks.
How about 2.5? So that lets the 2 weeks in there.
The theaters will try to get their money back some way on it. And if it means showing midnight screenings for however long it takes, I'm sure they'll do it.
I don't know. It's not even bad enough to be good. It's just bad enough to be bad.
Period.
You know what I think is the worst thing?
Oh,
us talking about this movie enough will get someone interested to go see it. And here's the thing. You really should not go see it. I'm telling you right now.
We're going to
save yourselves.
We're going to create a ride called Street Fighter, the Legend of Chun-Li, the ride. And it will consist of just stepping on a rake and having it hit you in the forehead 80 times.
90 times.
90 times. Once for each per minute.
Once per every single time Chun-Li receives an egg roll. Now let's talk about one other thing that I also want to bring up.
What about the romantic subplot? Were you going to bring that one up?
What romance? You mean the moment you thought Chun-Li was pregnant?
No, not that one. Actually, the moment
Kristen Kreuk being so thin, it was so weird to see her look like she was pregnant.
No, actually, are you talking about the same scene where she got up clutching her kidney and I went, oh, my freaking kidney?
Oh, no, I thought she was pregnant in that scene. I was like, dang, did they just not show? Did I miss something? Like, did the screen say 9 months later?
I was talking about the romantic subplot between Moon Bloodgood and Charlie Clyde.
Moon Bloodgood, who I respect because she was in a great
Charlie
series,
Nash?
Journeyman.
What?
She plays
a Charlie Nash, Charlie
original
Clyde,
character in this, and she's just basically a detective in Thailand, and she's supposed to have a romantic subplot with Chris Klein, who plays Charlie Nash, although they don't really care whether you know he is Charlie Nash or anything.
And for some reason, he's in Interpol and wears dog tags. That makes no sense either.
And also, we went to see the movie with someone who actually knew Thai, and she just
started giggling.
Just laughed every time that woman tried to speak Thai.
Oh, here's one other thing I want to tell you about. Chun-Li's supposed to speak Chinese, right?
Oh, it's so bad.
There is a portion at the very beginning where she says, "Xie xie, Baba," which is supposed to be, "Thank you, Father." They subtitled it as,
I love you, Dad. Yeah.
How does that work? This is for when he gives her
the spinning bird
necklace. And this is another pointless scene. Oh. At least another minute of worthless crap ejected into the film to pad to 90 minutes.
Don't forget that scene where she's dramatically playing the piano. I mentioned that already, but I have to say it again because it reminds me of when I was a kid playing piano and the people who had absolutely zero rhythm were the ones who were shaking around the most. Oh, so bad.
I believe that the moment where I no, maybe there are earlier moments, but the moment I remember the most of when I realized that this is going to be a pretty bad movie was when she's saying goodbye to her servants, who you've never seen before that point, and yet she's trying to look like she actually cares about these people. And you can tell she's not doing a terribly good job of it.
Yeah, I've lost any kind of faith in Kristen Crook as an actress or as, like, a fantasy even.
I will tell you this. My favorite thing about that scene, that particular minute, was she thanks the first servant. All the remaining servants she sort of glares at and then sort of, like, bows.
And don't forget that after she's gone, the head servant sort of shoos them away.
Yes.
It's like, you've just been laid off.
Yes.
Too bad your ass got sacked.
I'm just sort of like, wow, you know, I even feel like Kristen Croik is just like, oh, extras, I'll get this thing done with, and then I'll go into my montages of walking across Thailand and voiceovering.
Voiceovering. I kept
there
mentioning
is
to
so
you.
So much voiceovering. Oh,
but only in the
movie.
First half of the movie, though. Yes, actually, the very first half and the very
most
end.
Most of the movie is in voiceover.
It reminds me of the very bad cut of Blade Runner. And I said as much to you in the theater. It's like, doesn't this remind you of Blade Runner? Especially with the scenes in Bangkok where it's just this dirty Asian landscape. And so you just think that you're watching Blade Runner as the bad cut of Blade Runner with Harrison Ford talking over everything.
I gotta ask this. They've never addressed this plot point. Chun-Li gives up everything. She comes from a very rich family. She has a house. She's got tons of money to go live on the street.
In Thailand.
In Thailand to apparently learn to live on the street because she doesn't really teach her anything. Why?
I think the purpose of that was that it had to show her how bad life was on Thailand, and it had to make her stand up for people getting beat up.
It's supposed to be a humbling experience.
Not really humbling. She just had to stand up and fight on the street.
I think they're trying to channel the Batman Begins plot about how he travels the world learning about crime, and then they didn't know how to do that.
Speaking of stolen superhero moments, did you guys see that scene that was straight out of the first Spider-Man movie where they suddenly start throwing fruit at Michael Clark Duncan and his goons who are wielding guns? And yes. Michael Clark Duncan's like, oh no, they're throwing durians at us. Our guns are no match for their durians.
Yes, Balrog,
and they run away.
And, like, two of the bison soldiers, they're chasing Chun-Li
through
the streets. They have guns. Yes, they are shooting at her.
And by the way, remember that the slums are supposed to be empty by now. They
have been purchased by Bison Corps or something like that.
But anyway, and so they're chasing them through the streets with guns, and then random people on the street start throwing fruit at them.
And you can't forget the exploding watermelons.
And the exploding watermelons. But yeah, it's just like, it feels like exactly that tacked-on scene at the end of Spider-Man 1.
Oh, where they throw the stuff at the Green Goblin, telling him to stop picking on Spider-Man. The Green Goblin decides not to throw his pumpkin bombs at those
or
people.
Or shoot his missiles.
Or just kill the kids in the damn car.
Because the entire movie was about the Green Goblin killing innocents.
What a great plot point to make me remember about Spider-Man.
Yeah, don't you love that movie even more now because of that scene that got added because of 9/11?
Wow.
Okay, where were we on Street Fighter? What part of it being bad were we talking about? Sound mixing? How about sound mixing? Are we going to work on that?
I'm fine with whatever. I didn't really care.
You know, maybe
you have not talked about the visual effects of
her fireball, which is just this glowing circle, this glowing sphere of energy, and there's never any motion to it. Whenever she throws it, it just sort of comes toward the screen and gets bigger.
The special effects were, especially the green screen shots where they're running away from explosions, whatnot, or when they're supposed to be covered in dust, and yet they're perfectly clean, and The special effects were just bad.
Not $60 million worth, right? I mean, like, how do you have $60 million? You can't even do these visual effects that well. So the whole thing sort of stinks of a graft. It seems so much like someone took $20 million and just went away with it. Or
they were on location in Thailand. There were plenty of little boys and drugs around.
Okay, steering clear from that topic.
hey, Amy agreed with me, you know? It's like, I've got to become one with the people. What, by becoming a Thai prostitute? She agreed.
There is a scene, and, you know, this is like, I guess, a spoiler, not really, in which Balrog shoots a rocket at Gen's headquarters.
While his people are inside.
Yes, while his people are inside, and Gen is inside. The entire place blows up. We see that it blows up very unspectacularly. Chun-Li thinks that Gen is dead. She proceeds with her life. Gen comes back. He's not dead.
She's totally okay with
this.
They
hug for a little bit. They're okay, and they go back to doing their normal stuff. What the hell is that about?
And then he was supposed to die like another time at least in the fight against Marco Clark Duncan.
And then he is supposed to die another time when he fights Bison.
Yeah. He supposedly dies like three times in that movie and nothing happens to him. So bad. Just so bad. Everything. The script was bad. The voiceovers were bad. The acting was... Oh, the script was... Oh, the music was bad. The sound
I love how
was
you
bad.
Claim there is a script. It almost feels as though they were just filming in order and saying, like, do this. We'll have you voice it over in the end.
Just walk through the streets of Bangkok at random. We'll fix it in post-production. That's the mantra I always joke about because it's what they say it a lot in... it's what they said a lot in Phantom Menace, right? In the entire first trilogy, supposedly.
Oh, you mean George Lucas's famous words of we'll faster with more intensity.
And it's like, what is it? We'll fix it in post-production, right?
Oh, that was for the trilogy that will not be named.
Right.
What did you guys think about the fight choreography since, you know, Street Fighter fighting?
I could not see it because they decided to move the camera in weird ways prevent me from seeing it because it probably sucked.
The only time the camera stopped was to put a close-up on either Kristen Crook or Michael Clark Duncan grinning or Taboo.
You have forgotten about the close-up of the egg roll.
Oh God! And I just remembered an early fight with Michael Clark Duncan and Chun Li's father in the table.
Oh yeah, there's a table pushing fight.
Yeah, there's a table pushing fight, which is just ridiculous to watch.
You remember how he pushed the other side of the wine bottle and the wine balls?
That actually was kind of decent. Where he breaks the wine bottle and then he sets the wine on fire and
he sets his hand on fire. Explain that.
Because of the wine. Because it was super alcoholic wine.
His hand is not, like, burned or anything. He feels no pain.
Because he's that badass, even though he can't beat anybody, apparently.
Yes, he can't break. He's able to set his hand on fire and beat people with that fiery hand, but he cannot break free from his captors or attempt to break free to get back to Chun-Li, who he's worked, like, what, 10, 15 years with Bison for just to make sure she's safe.
Oh, yeah, and another running theme throughout this movie is that apparently in this movie, people are very, very easily coerced to do very stupid things.
Or terrible things.
Or terrible things. Like, even at the threat of death from Bison, he goes, like, guard this door, or I'll kill you first. It takes, like, what, 2 seconds for him to, like, give up the combination to get into that door?
He doesn't actually give up the combination. According to Amy, what he's shouting during that scene is, that hurt! That hurt! That hurt! Brilliant Thai dialogue. You know, no. The thing is that Charlie Nash hacks the code by the simple expedient of just hitting numbers at random. Because his hacking is so good. And don't forget how wonderful as an action hero he is by standing up in the middle of a gunfight when he's lying down and then just standing there. Or backing into doors that he hasn't hooked
in yet. I was about to mention, he's with like this police squad, right? They open up a door that they've never, you know, looked, you know, within yet, right? He puts his back to that door and trying to guard whoever's coming towards the door.
He doesn't even look
in the
door.
And then eventually he goes into the,
he never looks into the door.
Oh.
And then there's the part where, you know, they have a safe house, supposedly, and he's just walking around, and like 2 hours into their preparation, he looks down and goes, bomb!
Oh, that's true.
Because
spoiler,
somehow
right?
Didn't notice the bomb.
Oh, yeah, and Bison's minions apparently are the worst shots ever, because after that building explodes, they're out in the open, they're surrounded. All these people, all of Bison's men, are shooting with like these semi-automatics. And yet,
or
none
fully
of them,
automatics.
And yet, none of them are hitting anyone. And yet,
that's even worse than stormtroopers. At least stormtroopers can hit other goons.
And yet, like every time, either Charlie takes a shot or any of the good guy squads take a shot. You just see, like, you see a person firing a gun, and then you see a guy get a headshot.
And not only that, these are guys in, like, full Kevlar, you know, armor. They've got everything, and they just take one shot, and they fall down, and they're dead.
And here's the thing that even surprises me more. This is a Street Fighter movie. We're talking about guys shooting each other on different police squads and like Bison's army men and things like that. Would you ever think that that's what you would be talking about for a Street Fighter movie?
No. Especially a boxer shooting a gun. That's
well, it's better than in the cartoon where you see a boxer hacking a console while still wearing his boxing gloves. Seth Killian, the community manager for Capcom Unity, he posted a selection of clips from the Street Fighter movie once, and his tagline for it was, "This is how you kill your flagship franchise."
You mean the Street Fighter cartoon series?
The Street Fighter cartoon series, you're right. And that is not how you kill your flagship franchise. This is how you kill your flagship franchise. The Legend of Chun-Li. I mean, okay, here's another thing that just makes absolutely no sense. So she's a concert pianist. And she's playing in Hong Kong, and then someone sends her a scroll.
Yes, the random scroll.
Someone sends her a scroll, and she's been speaking Chinese this whole time. She looks down at it, and it's obviously in Chinese, and she goes, "I can't read this. I should find someone to read this for me." And so instead of going to
No. At first she just goes, "I wonder who sent it."
That's right. It's beautiful. I wonder who sent it.
They've never explained who sent it either.
No, they vaguely explain who sent it. They say that Gen sent it. But anyway, so the thing is, she goes into apparently the deeper parts of Chinatown in Hong Kong to find someone who can read this Chinese scroll for her. These ancient scrolls. She's just like, "I need to find someone Chinese to read this for me in Hong Kong. Where can I find that?" Oh,
I love that scroll. Such a great plot point.
It never does anything.
It adds a minute to the runtime.
Oh boy.
It adds several minutes,
like 3 minutes to the runtime.
That's because really good for this movie.
After her mother dies, she pulls it out again and just unrolls it. And it's like, what is she doing? And then she, to explain what she's doing, she does more voiceover. Instead of, you know, just having her do it.
Yes, instead of having her just go to the woman to have her read the scroll, she has to tell you, "So I decided I needed to find someone to read the scroll." Yes, I am not that stupid, please. Although, you know, I did see this movie, so I guess I am that stupid.
We're
Man.
All that stupid now.
It'll definitely feel a lot dumber.
They definitely knew their audience.
Oh, yeah.
So, any final words about Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li? I think we spent most of this podcast talking about it. And even then, I feel like we've only just sort of
brushed the edge of its terribleness.
We've only sort of looked deep into it. Not even the whole way through.
My final thought is, I would actually rather have stepped on 90 rakes and had them hit me in the face than have watched this movie. I will make that the Sideshow Bob experience. Guaranteed by Dom to be better than Street Fighter the movie.
The Legend of Chun-Li.
The Legend of Chun-Li, that's right. It may not be better than Street Fighter the movie. That had camp value.
My analogy about this movie is like asking someone who doesn't know how to cook, and ask him to make a gourmet meal and then see what comes out.
And yes, you also give them, you know, very good ingredients. And then just nothing comes out.
Yeah, it's just not very good at all.
Thanks for that, Chris, our master of understatement.
I just have this to say about Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. When the movie was over, when the movie's over for anything, I usually want to talk to people about the movie, at least. I really didn't want to talk to you guys at all about this movie.
We kind of looked at each other in shame, as if we'd just seen each other naked in a bathhouse or something.
I just felt so, like, I thought the movie was dumb, but I was like, man, I watched this movie. The hell is wrong with me, right? Like, I can't explain how there was unsatisfying, how painful it is to know that this movie got that much money to be made. And yet, you know, we've seen other great filmmakers struggle to even get a budget. I mean, this was, I hate to say this because, you know, a lot of people worked very hard on this movie. This was, if garbage had garbage, that's how bad it was. I would say I'd rather see my mom in the shower then watch this movie.
There was a sense of shared shame, as if we'd just watched an old man get beaten to death and not done anything about it.
Anyways, you can reach us online at www.s-words-podcast.com. Email us any suggestions for the suggestions segment, and that would be feedback@s-words-podcast.com. You can also check out the Facebook group online. I don't know the address of it. Just Google. I mean, not Google.
Just search on Facebook.
For S-Words Podcast. And we are also on Twitter, and by we, I mean Dom. At twitter.com/s_words.
Let's do our quote sound off then.
Man, usually I'm so excited to tell you to do this quote sound off, but I guess you want to get straight through
Let's
to it.
Let's just get straight to it. All right, please.
Dumb.
Charlie,
lead us off.
Come to Candy Mountain, Charlie.
Quick, change the channel.
Those were $500 glasses.
You always stand up when standing up isn't easy. I'm Chun-Li. And this has been my story about how I got a free egg roll.
Yes, you can. Can I be a star? Can I be a star?
S-Words.
Okay, wait.
Brought to you by the S-Words.
S-Words.
Mike, save us.
S-Words.
Awesome.
Sorry.
All right, shall we get started?
All right.